we are talking about imperialism and whether imperialism is an act of theft. And so if we came in and stole the land from people that owned it before us, and so we were wrong for doing that, it's not entirely clear who owns any land.
Right.
You know, I mean, what kind of... Yeah, I mean, I think more discussion has to be made about this, but let me just give you some illustrations. I'll tell you why I pause here. First of all, some of the land was purchased, and it was purchased at agreed-upon price. You know, Staten Island, I think, is probably the great example. You know, a bag of beans, they got the whole island, which is now worth kabillions, you know.
Right.
But at that time, those people paid... they had an agreement for that land, and so some of it's purchased, all right?
Right.
Some of it's wild. It didn't belong to anybody, you know. It's just you could, you know, there was room for expansion. It isn't like anybody held the title deed to the state of Texas, for example, or to Arkansas or that whole territory. The way things were done back then was that people, powers expanded to take the thing, and it made the, and the people who fought the best got to keep the land. Now, this wasn't the rule of just the white man. I just came back from our property in Wisconsin a week or so ago, and we've had this property since 1960. We built a cabin on it. It turns out to be on a reservation, Indian reservation. The property was purchased from the Indians who gave it, but we're still within the confines of the reservation. And so there in Lac du Flambeau, Wisconsin, you have the Great Lakes Chippewa, or as they prefer to be called, the Ojibwa. And that is the kind of the predominant tribe in that whole part of the country, and they actually further a little bit further west. Now, I just read again a pamphlet that I've had for a while that was printed by the town of Lac du Flambeau. You know, it's a tourist attraction, and they have the powwows and the this and that and whatever, and so they have these pamphlets that explain the background history. And I just read it again a couple of weeks ago. And what it says is that for 300 years, there were bloody wars. These are not my terms, but the terms in the pamphlet, between the Great Lakes Chippewa and the Sioux, because the Great Lakes Chippewa had come down from Canada to occupy these lands that were then occupied by the Sioux. And they fought them, and they beat them after 300 years of bloody warfare and drove the Sioux out. And now it belonged to the Ojibwa. The Sioux went west. Now, when the white man comes in and takes it away from the Ojibwa, and then they cry foul, you have to give us land back, you got to pay us, or whatever. Now, it seems to me, on the grand scheme of things, what sauce for the goose should be sauce for the gander. They stole it from somebody before them, and I suspect that the Sioux moved in on some other people that were there before them. Because that's the way this kind of thing happens. And, you know, can you... you know, move into the property and, you know, live peaceably together. I imagine you could. There's more room. There's room for more people, but it was these people claimed it for themselves just by raw fiat, and that in order to take it, have land for yourself when others want to expand, they have to beat the people that have claimed it by raw fiat, not by any, in a sense, legitimate claim to the land. I'm not even sure what that is. What is a legitimate claim to the land? I guess if somebody has their piece of property and they work that piece of property, then they build something, they create some wealth, and that wealth that they build and create is their own. But the land wasn't built and created by those people. They were just going in there and hunting it. So I think what this raises is legitimate questions as to whose property it was anyway. And the Americans, when they came in, were just simply following the fashion of everybody else in the world, including the people they supplanted who had done the very same thing to the ones who came before them. And so here I am in Lac du Flambeau on the reservation, ceded to these people by the government, and they continue to get massive amounts of aid as a payback, when I don't think one dime is going of that money is going from the Ojibwa to the Sioux because they had taken the land from them prior to it.
I guess the question, though, that comes from that is, is it right, though?
Well, I don't know. I mean, and I don't know what the alternative is. I don't think it's right to take something that is belongs to somebody else. But I think the question is, what is it that belonged to the Native Americans? The land? And if it did belong to that particular tribe that we took it from, that some white men took it from, then why did it belong to them? Well, that belonged to them pardon me, because they stole it from somebody else. So can you steal from a thief? And is it still theft? Is that land rightfully there? And that's the kind of thing that I think makes this a very tricky situation.
Yeah. Well, is this land ours now? I mean, could we even say that as well? Could
yes.
we say that that America is ours now? If that's where it seems like...
Yes, I think so. Certainly, it can, but partly because we invested ourselves in it and toil, and we made something of it that wasn't here before. And so we created capital wealth. And if you take a stick, maybe the stick laying on the ground isn't yours. It's anybody's who wants to pick it up. But if you pick that stick up and you whittle it into a tool, then that tool is yours. Because you have added, you've created some value to it. Just because its stick is on the ground doesn't make it yours. But if you add your labor to it and make something new of it, that which you've made is yours, and that's what should not be taken from you. That would be theft. But I don't know why. What if I just walked out and say, I claim all the sticks in the ground, and if you take any of those that I claim, then you're stealing from me. What right do I have to that?
No, I agree.
So, again, I'm not, you know, arguing in favor of imperialism at this point or colonization. I'm just simply saying that you know, I think that other questions have to be answered before you can kind of put the finger on the American colonists here. And and there's a lot of blame to go around, and I think they were simply playing by the rules of the day. And if you're playing by the same rules maybe this is a way of thinking about it. If you're playing by the same rules everyone else is playing by, then how can you be faulted? I mean, it really was the same rules that everyone else was playing by, including the Native Americans.
Right.
Now, there might have been a few exceptions to that, but there are exceptions on both sides of the aisle on this. So that's why I can't. I don't think the answer is okay. We got to pay them back for what we took from them. I think that's nonsense.
Oh no, I agree. I think both of us came to the same conclusion as well.
Well, that's good.
But it was just I don't know. I guess it was. I guess I was missing the part where if I took something. I think that your stick analogy was really good.
Yeah,
I didn't have that point.
Right.
So would we say then back in history, they were playing by the rules? But I mean, that wouldn't necessarily make it right. But we could say that.
Well, I don't know what was right. I honestly don't know what was right in those circumstances. That's what I mean. We sometimes we have this thing called the tyranny of the present, where we take our sensibilities of the present state of affairs and we try to import them into the past or export them into the past, and make them apply to a set of circumstances that weren't like that at all. I mean, a lot of people think, oh, well, Paul, he was a terrible chauvinist pig, you know, the Apostle Paul, oh, he was awful. But when you read his writings in the context of the times, he was a liberator in the context of the times. And I think that's the way we have to read these things. There was a set of rules that everybody played by. And there was tacit agreement to those rules. So they aren't the rules that we play by today. But we were playing by the rules that everybody else was playing by, so it didn't seem to me that we were doing anything wrong. I mean, that argument could be made.
Okay.
And I guess I'm more comfortable with that kind of argument than saying, yeah, well, we've got this thing now, you know, where everybody's nice, and we don't take things from people. And weren't we bad when we did that back then? I don't know. I'm not so convinced of that. So, you know, and with regards to colonizing, you know, and I'm thinking that could have been, that often was a brutal process. The imperialism of the European powers, I think, was often brutal. But you know what? An argument could be made that even though that happened and there were brutal elements to it, the people in general turned out to be much better off under Western domination than ruling themselves. And we learned this the hard way when all in the 60s, all those African nations got their independence and then they just went around butchering each other.
Right.
So in India is a much better place now because it had British rule. I'm convinced of that. So, you know, it's just these kinds of accusations are not as tidy as some people want to make them seem.
Okay. No, I appreciate that. I think that's given me enough to go on. I do like the stick thing to make a lot of sense.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thanks,
Chris.
Appreciate your call.